A man needs to dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And the world will be better for this. That one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable star. In November 1965, Don Quixote opened on Broadway under the title The Man of La Mancha. It was just an old, old story, some 400 or 500 years old, and its opening didn't rouse much excitement. And yet that evening, when the people heard the play, when it was over, they responded with a standing ovation. People had been reached. Critics said that it would last generations. There was something unusual about it. I don't know if you had to read Don Quixote in school or not, but he was a man who was touched with a bit of madness. He thought he was a knight. He could go out and make all the wrongs right. He had a knack of seeing in people what they were capable of becoming. Over at the inn, he saw a woman who was a part-time maid and a part-time prostitute named Aldonza. He saw in her something which could be glorious and beautiful, and so he changed her name to Dulcinea. Really, it reminds us of the way that Jesus looks at people, how he changed Simon's name to Peter because he could see a rockness that would one day come out, or Saul's name being changed to Paul, indicating what God would one day expect of him and what one day he would be able to do. Well, as we indicated a while ago, when the musical had been played, there was a standing ovation, with tears flowing down a good many eyes. The success of it was something of a miracle. Was it the music? Well, the music's good, but it's not all that good. Was it the players? Well, the players did a very good job, but they weren't all that unusual. Well, perhaps it was the setting. Well, the story is well placed, but again, it's not that good. Apparently, there's something in this old story that made people realize that there was something way down deep inside which they thought was dead and gone and was still alive. Something that they could be if they really wanted to be. And because of the resurrection of that dream, no matter how impossible, people stood with tears in their eyes. This probably accounts to some degree for the tremendous success of the Sermon on the Mount. It seems that everybody loves it, though it presents some impossible teachings considering our natures. Things like turning your other cheek to the man who's just struck you on the one side, or going the second mile with a man that you didn't want to go the first mile with, or loving a man who has proclaimed himself your enemy, or praying for those who persecute you, and even that last little phrase, being perfect, as your Heavenly Father is perfect. Now, all of that seems all right for the Son of God, but you know, it hardly seems possible with the sons of men. But still, the Sermon on the Mount has a tremendous appeal. It's not because it has 10 rules for easy living, nor even because it offers a minute approach around one's nervous breakdown, nor even for success in life, at least by worldly standards. In fact, it's the most terrifying indictment of the way us mortals live. Jesus turns upside down every value that we have ever known. Your enemy hates you. Instead of fighting back, that's your cue to favor him. And one by one, he lays a shaft to our actions and our thoughts. But he puts a dream in our hearts that is never quite achieved, one that continually pulls us and stretches us upward. The setting for this sermon is somewhere in northern Galilee. Jesus, if you remember, had been going throughout the countryside healing the sick. His fame has spread clear up into Syria, and so he comes here for a rest, and he's beset by the crowds. Everything that man had ever hinted at being good seemed to be sounded when he opened his mouth and he taught them, saying, Do you know who the really happy people are, the blessed? Well, they are the people who sense a very desperate need inside, who are beaten down by life and humbled. They're the people who have been hurt very deeply by what life has brought, and therefore they know how to mourn. They're the people who are driven and hounded by a hunger for goodness. Those who abide in the pain that they have suffered have learned how to share mercy with those who are in pain. Those who, because of the suffering that they have endured, have purified their hearts. It is those who are determined to live peaceably with all men. It is those who are too fine of life to be left alone by the world, and so they're persecuted. That's the preamble. That's the Beatitudes. And who of us would lay our hearts beside that and say, I've measured up to those characteristics, but Jesus has just begun. You call yourselves teachers of Israel, he says, and as teachers you've decided that it's wrong to kill, which is right. But yet, I tell you, if you even speak flippantly to your brother, you sinned as well. And as teachers you've decided that adultery is wrong. Well, yea, I tell you, even the lustful look at another person is as wrong as well. You've decided that you're living a pretty good life because you love others who love you. Well, even the pagans do that. If you really want to go the Father's way, start blessing those who curse you, praying for those who treat you in an evil fashion, and be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. As the impact of that begins to come home, he says as it accumulates, you're people who do comparatively little righteousness. You're very careful who sees you. Well, stop deceiving yourselves. Stop praying to be seen of men. Well, that's all you're going to get. And when you fast, don't disfigure your faces. You don't want men to know it. You want God to be aware of it. Do your service before God. Moreover, don't set your heart on materialistic values. For as sure as you fasten your heart on material things, you'll die with those things. In fact, there's only one way to be happy in life, and that's through indirection. Putting God at the top of the list and everything else will happen as it ought. And don't even think about asking forgiveness unless you're willing to forgive others. And don't try to be right with him until you have put his way first with all men. And then he says, you've been knocking at the door of life to try and find meaning, and you don't get an answer. Well, if you'll knock sincerely, if you'll really hammer at that door, the door of life will open. Up until now, you've only half minute. But if you put it first, and it's a very narrow door that I'm opening. Of course, if you want to go the other way, you can stroll down the gate of death with your hands in your pockets, a very broad way. But if you're going to go this way, you're going to find the going very difficult. It means doing to men what you want them to do to you. It means being constantly judged by the fruit test of your own life. And it's not going to be enough to say, Lord, Lord. Because in that great judgment scene, there's going to be many who say, I know you. And I'm going to be forced to say, I don't believe we've ever met. You couldn't be one of mine because of the way you've lived. I think you better go away now. If you venture to live your life like this, you'll find that the storms of life are never quite able to touch you. If you don't, you're going to find out what it means to build on shifting sand when the wind's up and the rain starts to fall. Well, the people were astonished. How could God expect this of plain mortals? He may be able to live up to that, but how can we live up to such a standard? Isn't it an impossible dream? Need not we even bother to go out and try and practice it, because we can't reach that kind of perfection. Well, perhaps we'd better stop for a second thought. We need to be careful what we call impossible in our time. Man is doing a great many things that were once counted impossible. A marriage relationship over here which lasts a half a century between two people who frankly admit that they didn't know each other when it all began. And the impossible has almost been brought about. Something else. An ideal is to be judged not by the degree to which we're able to attain it, but by the direction that it gives to our lives. But we're not much for ideals, especially the impossible. And yet, an ideal can do something for life that nothing else can even hope to do. It can give a reason for living. The writer of Hebrews, recounting the Old Testament hero, says in Hebrews 11, These all died in faith, not having received what was promised, but having seen it and greeted it from afar, and having acknowledged that they are strangers and pilgrims on the earth. But as it is, they desire a country that's a heavenly one, and therefore God's not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. Well, here are people who didn't reach their goal, but because they dreamed, life was made better. In the story of Don Quixote, after he has done his knight's errands, he goes home a broken and disillusioned man, and he lies down to die. Aldonza heard about it, and she remembered the dream that he had put in her heart, and he rushes in and he pleads with her not to die. Remember, you once called me Dulcinea. Call me Dulcinea again. Give me back the dream. And she reminds him of the words of the song that we mentioned before. Finally, she so inspires him that he gets up off his bed and fancies that he could go out and be a knight again. And he sings a song, and then he collapses and dies. But Aldonza refused to believe that he's dead. A man is dead, that he seemed to be a good man, but Don Quixote is alive. And when someone rebuked her and called her Aldonza, she said, "My name is Dulcinea." And she reminds us of how a dream can penetrate the heart. And all of those who were around watching this scene within a scene began to sing the song about the impossible dream. And what Don Quixote had imagined with a bit of madness spread to everybody else. And they all remembered something inside that they could be and weren't. The people who were standing before Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount are people who are just like you and I. They have the problems that you and I have. They have a tug of war going on inside between what they feel they ought to be and what they actually are. People just as good, just as bad, just as in between. But an ideal is judged not by the degree to which we can attain it, but by the direction that it gives to our lives. One other thing about the Sermon on the Mount is it's impossible dream without being perfect. A person gets a dream like this, and it turns them powerless in their lives, and whether they're ever able to attain it perfectly or not, it still gives them a power that they couldn't have had otherwise, to know that the Father loves us individually and calls us to that kind of living. It sets loose a tremendous power. It seems that this is what the world needs, an impossible dream. A religion that you can live up to is one that is just not worth having. It has to stretch you and pull you farther than you've ever been stretched before. It's got to give an ideal that one can attain into so that he can keep on trying. I have an idea that this is what America needs. The pilgrims landed here with almost nothing but a dream. And that famous American dream was born about holding these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed with certain unalienable rights. Well, somehow lost that dream. He settled down and became materialist instead of idealist. And we forgot that we could go farther, faster, and we're broken and hurt. I have an idea that this is what the church needs. The early church had a challenge. It determined to preach the gospel to the Gentiles, and they established churches in all the major cities, Rome, Ephesus, Athens, and Corinth. In the early part of this century, when religion seemed so stale, there was a student organization formed called the Student Volunteer Movement, with a slogan, "The World for Christ in This Generation." Well, they failed, but thousands of lives were changed because of that ideal. But we're too sophisticated for an ideal. Don't talk to me about an impossible dream. And the church is suffering because it needs something to attain to. I have an ideal that this is what every individual needs. Something to reach forward to. Once we get a glimpse of what things can be with God's help, life can be different. Without it, life becomes drudgery. If we take this sermon seriously, it will have an impact on our lives. And we'll find ourselves saying to the Father, I can't live up to it. I can't make it. But will you take what I've done and finish it? And you'll know that it is finished. And what you were unable to do is completed. The impossible dream is yours if you're willing to have it. By laying hold on His promise in faith and responding to His will in your life and the world will be better for this. That one man, scorned, covered with scars, still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable star.